We'll bring the Environment Natural Resources Finance Committee to order. Representative Hansen, have you looked at the minutes?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chair, and I would move to approve them.
Representative Hansen moves to approve the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Members, we've got one bill before us today, and then we're going to talk about game and fish license increases a little bit later in the committee, and that should be an interesting discussion. But first up, we have the chairman, Representative McNamara's bill, House File 2870 before us. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that...
Representative McNamara, you'd like to move your bill, House File 2870?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to move House File 2870 to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Very good. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that deals with temporary drawdowns in shallow wetlands to encourage... it's a new technology in recent years, and it's just really exciting, and it's helping in waterfall. And Ms. Don Carlos from the DNR is here to explain the bill, and we'll stand for questions. I believe maybe DU wants to also testify, but I think that's the extent of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Representative McNamara. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Kathy Don Carlos, DNR, Fish and Wildlife Deputy Director.
Thank you.
Good morning. We really appreciate being here today to testify on the bill that's being introduced. I do want to point out that in your packets, you do have a copy of the Shallow Lake Management Report. This report was mandated. The DNR was mandated last year to complete this report for the legislature. And in those instructions, we were asked to report on the ecology, the importance, management, and regulatory framework for shallow lake management in Minnesota, along with recommendations for statutory changes to better manage those resources. So this report does all of those things. We have, as Representative McNamara mentioned, staff and Ducks Unlimited staff, DNR staff, and then also Kyle Zimmer from University of St. Thomas to help testify on this. I would like to just preface our comments with the importance of shallow lake management in the state. As many of you probably know, shallow lakes are less than 15 feet in depth and at least 50 acres in size, and we have more than 4,000 basins in the state. They're under tremendous impact right now. They're affected by high water, by modifications in the watersheds, by invasive species, by undesirable fish, by surface water disturbance, shoreline development, and changing climatic conditions. So these are very sensitive resources that are just very, very vulnerable. The DNR has employed a number of strategies to protect these basins and better manage these systems. For example, in the area of shoreline protection, water level management, and removal of undesirable fish. However, our regulatory options could be expanded, and in the final part of this report, we identify several changes that would help us better manage these shallow lake basins. So without further time spent on the setup for you, I'd like to ask, with the chair's permission, Ray Norgard from DNR, John Schneider from Ducks Unlimited, and also Kyle Zimmer from UST.
Very good.
Continue
please,
the discussion.
Please come forward. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Ray Norgard, Wetland Management Program Leader for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. As Kathy has indicated, the recommendations in the report required by the department is twofold. One recommendation would broaden the authority of the commissioner under Minnesota Statutes 103G408 to initiate periodic temporary drawdowns of public waters. The other recommendation would allow the commissioner to initiate proceedings to designate waterfall feeding and resting areas and waterfall sanctuaries under Minnesota Statutes 97A095, subdivisions 1 and 2. It would also provide greater latitude in applying the restrictions for waterfall sanctuaries beyond the regular waterfall season. The bill you have before you reflects these recommendations, and I'll just go through a couple of them just very quickly. In section 1, we have the recommended changes for the waterfall sanctuaries. Again, it's twofold. One is to allow the commissioner to initiate the proceedings. As it stands right now, proceedings on a waterfall sanctuary cannot be initiated unless a petition is received from 10 resident licensed hunters within the area that would be designated as a sanctuary. So this would allow the commissioner to initiate the proceedings without that petition, although it still requires that if a commissioner receives a petition, that he must act on it. The other thing in Section 1 is that it allows the commissioner to extend the restrictions that the waterfall sanctuary applies to other times other than just during the open waterfall season, which is how it stands now. In Section 2, it's essentially parallel to Section 1 in that, again, we have with waterfall feeding and resting areas a situation where the commissioner cannot take action unless it receives a petition from 10 local resident licensed hunters. This again would allow the commissioner to initiate proceedings without having that petition, although if a petition is received, the commissioner is bound to respond to it. In both of these cases, there is no change in terms of the process that occurs in terms of requirements for public hearing and opportunities for public comment. If we could move to Section 3. In Subdivision 11A, what we have is formalizing a definition of shallow lakes. The definition you see here is basically the internal definition that's used by the Department of Natural Resources for defining shallow lakes within the wildlife management program. As Kathy stated, it basically sets the criteria of 15 feet or less in maximum depth, greater than 15 acres in size. In Section 4, this is the modification of 103G408, which would allow the commissioner to initiate the process to do a drawdown, temporary drawdown, on public waters. So it expands the authority in Section 4 that was previously limited just to an application by an agency representing riparian landowners and requiring 75% of the landowners to sign on. So it just expands the authority for the commissioner. Another element of this particular section is a statement that periodic temporary drawdowns conducted under paragraph A shall not be considered takings from riparian landowners, recognizing that these are temporary drawdowns, they are not permanent changes in water level. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Norgard.
I'd like to turn over to
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen and I are co-authors on the bill, and there are two things that, as the bill got put in quickly, I need to move an oral amendment, and if I say it wrong, Ms. Taylor will, as she usually does, fix what I'm saying. But on line 1.16, I believe it would be after the word licensed, we would insert the word resident. That is our intent, that they be resident hunters, not non-resident. And then on page 3, line 1, I would like to reinstate the stricken language and delete the two-thirds on line 3.2. It was not our intent to change that. And Ms. Taylor worked hard one long day to get this done in quick hurry because the report just came back. So
okay.
If I could just get confirmation from Ms. Taylor, I did that right.
Representative McNamara, that's the extent of your amendments?
Yes,
okay. Mr. Chair, you have that, and could you repeat that, please?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment would be read on line 1.16 after license, insert resident. And then, Mr. Chair, the chair may also want to add on line 2.10 after license, resident is the same issue appears on that line as well. So you might want to add that to your amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And then on line 3.1, reinstate 75%, and then on line 3.2, delete two-thirds.
Okay. Okay, very good. Representative Wagenius, you had a question on the amendment?
I do. Hi. Is it all right?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the concept of the bill, but I have a big question here about, well, I have a couple of big questions about just making it perfect. Why is it only hunters that can say that this area should be a migratory waterfowl refuge? What about ordinary citizens who observe that this land should be a migratory waterfowl refuge? There's an interest beyond hunters in having great waterfowl in Minnesota. The implication here is the only reason you appreciate waterfowl is for killing them, and that's just not true. So I would say I would prefer that the language just be at least 10 residents rather than resident hunters. But that's a question for discussion.
Okay, who wants to tackle Representative Wagenius? Mr. Norgard?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I think we need to be clear here that within state statutes, there are several different types of refuges, sanctuaries. And under 97A085, where we have the basic statutes for establishing game refuges, you know, those can be established by essentially three different methods, you know, but all of them involving public input, resident landowners, you know, and or a petition from the general public. The history, as I understand it, behind the waterfall sanctuaries in this particular case is that they were intended to be affecting those areas just during the waterfall season. And so there was an emphasis, I believe, put on hunters as providing that petition. Essentially what we're asking for here is that to be broadened out so that the commissioner could respond to other requests to do it. But the language here is just a reflection of the history of how this developed over the years. In this case, the migratory waterfall sanctuary is only closed to hunting during the waterfall season. It doesn't have the same regulations as a game refuge under state law.
Okay.
Representative
Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the history. My question remains that there are other folks in Minnesota who may have the same interest.
Mr. Norgard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, it's a point well taken. I think the intent here was simply to maintain the traditional language in the statute. I don't believe the department would have any objection to looking at alternative language in terms of that petition.
Further discussion to the amendment. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Mr. Zimmer, did you have, would you like to have have a few words? Please, please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm Kyle Zimmer from the Biology Department at the University of St. Thomas. I'm here today to answer any questions that the committee might have on general Shell Lake ecology, especially in reference to the proposed bill changes.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With shallow lakes, with the public drawdowns, what needs to be done to prevent common carp from re-entering shallow lakes? Do we, when you have a drawdown, is there going to need to be physical barriers blocking the drainage channels or inlets or outlets?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, that's a very good question. One of the problems that we have studied for a long time in Minnesota is what we call connectivity. A lot of these basins are connected, some of them artificially, some of them by natural means, flooding events, et cetera, move the fish around. In an ideal situation, a lake that would undergo a drawdown would have some type of control mechanism to prevent common carp, black bullheads, other undesirable fish from re-entering the basin. One thing we have found, though, in the past is even if that's not the case, the drawdowns can be effective for improving habitat quality, at least for a shorter time period, not shorter being a number of years. So ideal situation, some control mechanism for preventing recolonization or at least slowing it down, but it still works under situations where recolonization happens quite quickly.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you any data or any research showing movement of bullheads or carp through underground drainage systems or culverts rather than open ditches?
Mr. Zimmer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence, people taking pictures of bullheads coming out of culverts, underground drainage tile, et cetera. We personally have seen lakes that we've studied for multiple years have complete winter kill of black bullheads, so that in the following year we detect no fish until the year after that, in which colonization happens again. That could be coming from somebody stopping by with a pail of black bullheads for whatever reason and dumping them back into the lake. That seems unlikely. But in all cases, the basins were connected with culverts to other water bodies.
Representative Guinness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm so glad you're here, actually, because one of my big questions about this work is not that we shouldn't be doing it. I totally believe we should be doing it. My question is there additional science that we should be doing that would make our work more effective?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgenius, absolutely. You know, science is always moving forward, looking for additional tools to improve the way we manage ecosystems. We know these systems are extremely stressed. Things have changed. We've done a lot of what we call paleolimnological sampling of these lakes. We go down the lake sediment cores and see what they were like 200 years ago. We have a lot of data that shows they've changed, and so we've got a lot of management problems. Additional things that, besides water level drawdown, manipulations of fish communities that we're looking into. Peter Sorensen's looking into alternative techniques for managing fish populations with, you know, structuring fish communities. We're looking at endocrine-disrupting compounds in lakes, et cetera, et cetera. So we're always looking for new tools. As technology develops, that opens up a lot of doors to help us in our management efforts. So I think it's fair to say that the DNR works with the universities to try to keep moving the forward, looking for additional tools. I think the bill with the emphasis on drawdowns is important because right now that's it is the best tool they have.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay, I know Mr. Schneider knows that I'm going to bring this up, but the reason I'm looking for additional tools and additional science is my experience going canoeing on Lake Christina every summer. And we just have a brand new dam there, and we went canoeing this summer, took the grandchildren out, and every year we see the nest with the grebes and the eggs and the reeds and everything, and it's really cool to take kids through that this year. No reeds, no nests, no grebes. The water was pea green. And I know we have spent tons of money on that lake. I don't regret that we're working on it, but it does seem that we need to know more about what we're doing. What's going on there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I've actually worked on Lake Christina for quite a while, and you know it's a troubling lake for all of us. When it's in good condition, it's the most beautiful gem in the state, I would argue. And when it's not, it's hard to look at and watch. Of interest, we just finished a study. It hasn't been published yet, but it's been submitted, where we did one of these paleo studies where we looked back in Lake Christina's core sediments, going back to about 1800. And what we found is that the lake was, as far as we can tell, permanently in a clear water state, high macrophyte abundance for 150 years. Somewhere around the 1930s, maybe 40s, things changed dramatically. The water was stabilized, water levels went up. Nutrient levels went up dramatically in the sediments, and at that point in time, the lake changed over to what we called a different state, where the turbid state was much more stable. And shortly thereafter, we started manipulating fish communities, etc. So I think the lake serves as an example of things have changed at a landscape level, where these lakes are facing multiple threats: high nutrient loading, high sedimentation rates, stabilized water levels, exotic fish with common carp, that make them very difficult to manage. And I think that that's part of what we're trying to do with the bill changes, to open up the door to water level manipulations, to try to put one more tool in the toolbox.
Could I have one more question?
Representative Wagenius.
In that area, I mean, the pea green has to be part carp, part nutrient, is what I was just guessing. That's no science. What are you doing in that particular lake, and how do we do it in other lakes to keep the nutrient loading down?
Mr. Zimmer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, that's a very difficult solution. It starts with reducing nutrient inputs from the watershed. And we've made a lot of progress in that, riparian buffers, et cetera. And what we found in the literature, the Europeans have been ahead of us looking at their shallow lakes for longer than we have. And if you can reduce external nutrient loading, one of the problems with shallow lakes, it doesn't happen in deeper lakes, is what we call internal nutrient loading. All the stuff that's in the sediment, phosphorus, nitrogen, just because they're so shallow, will get recycled again and again and again. But if you cut off the inputs from the watershed, eventually the lake will cleanse itself, especially something like Christina that's got quite a bit of water flowing through it. Once internal nutrient cycling reduces, you can get it back to pre-condition levels, where the lake will be much more stabilized in its clear water state. The problem is watershed efforts are expensive and take time, and the self-cleansing takes time to reduce the nutrient levels in the sediment. You can dredge sediment. They're actually doing that in Iowa lakes now. They're going out with dredges and literally hauling the mud out of the basins. There's so much nutrients stored there. That is another option. It's very expensive, and it's got negative consequences as well. But the largest thing is just to give nature time to reduce the internal cycling of the nutrients.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After talking with the author and the DNR, I'd like to move to strike the licensed hunters, and I believe that on 2.10 and 1.16, and I believe then it would read 10 residents demonstrating that the area is primarily.
Ms. Taylor, you have those changes?
Mr. Chair, members, actually, the previous amendment we had inserted residents, so we'd want to go to residents, but otherwise that would be correct. So on line 1.16, you delete licensed residents and insert residents. And then on 2.10, delete licensed resident and insert residents.
Author of the bill is okay with the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd be fine with that. I think it'd be great if non-hunters took interest in this, and maybe then they'd start buying licenses.
Very good. Any questions to the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Mr. Snyder.
Thank you.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is John Schneider. I'm the manager of conservation programs for Minnesota for Ducks Unlimited. I live in Alexandria, Minnesota. I've just got a few brief comments in support of the bill before you. There are approximately 4,000 shell lakes in Minnesota, and these are the cornerstones of the remaining waterfowl habitat we've got left in this state. These are large wetlands greater than 50 acres in size and less than 15 feet deep. These shallow lakes typically exist in one, two conditions. Either they're clear or they're turbid. And turbid doesn't provide the habitat that the birds need. When they are degraded and turbid, they are provide very little habitat in the form of aquatic plants, seeds, tubers, and macroinvertebrates that ducks and other birds depend upon. When they're clear and healthy, they are teeming with aquatic resources and wildlife that depend on them, especially waterfowl. The DNR's duck recovery plan calls for the management of 1,800 shallow lakes, and DU's Living Lakes Initiative provides the technical and financial assistance to the state to achieve that goal. Unfortunately, a number of shallow lakes, especially in the prairie ecoregion, are badly degraded. 60% of the shallow lakes surveyed by the DNR's Shallow Lakes Program in the prairie region from 2002 to 2011 were determined to be turbid, indicating they are strong candidates for MPCA's 303D impaired waters list. Research and monitoring has shown that the best way to manage these lakes and large wetlands is to temporarily lower their water levels every 5 to 10 years to remove carp and other invasive rough fish. This simulates natural drought conditions that keeps the wetlands healthy and productive. The DNR Shell Lakes Program has documented dramatic reductions in total phosphorus in these managed basins. For example, in Augusta Lake in Cottonwood County, DNR documented total phosphorus levels exceeding 550 parts per billion before a managed temporary drawdown, which was well above MPCA's impaired waters threshold of 90 parts per billion. Following a one-year managed drawdown, and a winter fish kill event that eliminated invasive carp, total phosphorus dropped dramatically to 50 parts per billion. As a result of that management action, water quality is now well within the state's acceptable levels. In other lakes, water quality has improved to make swimming and other forms of human recreation possible again, too. The bottom line here is that Ducks Unlimited is pleased to support this legislation, and we ask for your support in passing this bill out of committee today. On behalf of 38,000 members of Ducks Unlimited in Minnesota, we thank you for your support, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who would be best to answer this question, but many of our lakes in Minnesota are a combination of shallow waters and deeper waters. Will this program be effective in those sorts of situations, and what effect would a drawdown have on the deeper parts of the lake if you draw down the overall water level?
Mr. Zimmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a good question. I would probably answer that the shallower the basin gets, the more effective the water drawdown will be, because the shallower basin gets, the more natural it is to have the basin bounce. Where depth would improvement would change with depth, we're not sure, but probably as you get basins that are deeper than 15, 20, 25 feet, the effects would become less dramatic, although there's plenty of examples. White Bear Lake, for example, where even in a very large deep lake, when water levels drop, when the water comes back, you do get a very nice improvement in vegetation along the shoreline.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would that reestablishment of friendly vegetation tend to be less permanent in those situations, or would it be similar to just a typical shallow lake?
Mr. Zimmer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson. I think it would have the potential to be longer term. Again, I'm speculating a little bit on the deeper lakes because the water level changes happen less frequently. But one thing we've learned in ecology in general is that change is natural and it's good for ecosystems. We used to think that prairies shouldn't burn, forests shouldn't burn, and it was bad, until we realized that the worst thing we were doing is preventing that change. So I think in just a general sense, it'd be pretty easy to argue that any type of change, water level bounce, in even a deeper lake, would be good for the ecosystem.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to admit I don't know a great deal about shallow lakes. I do have a couple of questions or comments. On page 2 of the bill, line 2.4 and then down to 2.8, it says before the designation, the commissioner must, and I appreciate the term must there, describe the area in a public notice and receive public comments for 30 days. Can you give me a sense for what the plan is for receiving public comment? And me personally, I would think that it would be good to have some sort of a public meeting in the area where it's where the effect is going to be.
Mr. Chair, maybe I could ask the department to come down and they could elaborate on what the definitions, for instance, are of public notice and public comment and how they normally deal with that.
Okay.
I don't know.
Ms. Boncarlos.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, your question was, again, what is the process for public input?
Representative Fabian.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Ms. Boncarlos, I'm curious to know, it says that you must receive public comments for 30 days. Do you have a requirement within the agency that would require a public meeting in the area that's affected by the decision that the commissioner may make?
Ms. Boncarlos.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, it's my understanding that we don't always have public information meetings as part of this process, but we do take into consideration the comments that we do receive during that 30-day period.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned about private property owners and so forth who may have land adjoining a shallow lake, and I appreciate what we're trying to do here, but on page 1, for example, it talks about not being able to enter an area where the sign's going to be placed. If somebody has property next to a shallow lake, are they going to not be allowed to be on their property? These are some of the questions, and I apologize for bringing this up now, obviously, but that's what we're here for. So.
Mr. Norgaard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian. The waterfall sanctuary restriction applies only to the surface waters, does not apply to the land adjacent to it. There are situations where for example, on Swan Lake in Nicollet County, where we have a migratory waterfall sanctuary, where we have provided a permit to landowners who have land adjacent to it but have to cross that water in order to access it. So they're issued a special permit to do so. So we have that opportunity to meet the needs of landowners, you know, if they're needed. The intent of the waterfall sanctuary is simply to reduce surface disturbance, surface water disturbance to migrating birds, so that they have an opportunity to rest without having, you know, boats zooming back and forth through them, or, you know, whether it's by hunters or by the general public. We have, at this point in time, you know, very few migratory waterfall sanctuaries, only two that I can think of off the top of my head. So they're not applied very often, but they're applied for a very specific reason. And typically, we certainly have not had any issues with adjacent landowners. The landowners, again, would have part of the process, you know, opportunity within that process to provide comment to the department and or request for special dispensation.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other thing I'm curious about is, you know, we've heard from DNR the fact that we are selling fewer licenses. We're getting fewer hunters in the field. I'm cautious about this. The migratory waterfall sanctuary, the designation, the length of time. I mean, are we going to be taking a back door to discouraging more hunters from coming into the field? Representative McNamara, maybe you could address that for me, please.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Representative Fabian. This has come about at Hunter's request. This is our generally speaking, I think the only couple we've done have been on large bodies of water where unfortunately it sometimes doesn't take very much hunting pressure at all. And I'm kind of laughing, Representative Dill, because I'm thinking of you and your son in South Dakota, and you throw those wind decoys out, and you go out and you shoot your limit of greenhead mallards in the morning, and you sneak right back out right away because you want to minimize the disturbance so that he can come back the next day with an opportunity because they minimize the disturbance. And unfortunately, and Representative Fabian, you know this, and folks like Representative Drazkowski that hunt a lot, Representative Hansen, you want to sneak in and out as much, as little as possible. Unfortunately, a couple of boats zooming through the resting area could lift up a huge raft of migratory waterfowl and move them. And we think of it only in the fall. It actually could be a potential issue in the spring, moving them around when we're trying to build up their strength. So I think this is something, generally speaking, Representative Fabian, the hunters will be very supportive of, because it, truthfully, from a selfish standpoint of a hunter, this could really help us a lot to get more opportunity.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, hunters in general will. What about the guys who have been hunting, or women who've been hunting on a body of water for several years, and now 10 people from around the state have asked the commissioner to designate this as a wildlife sanctuary? He takes their concern and does that, and now they are going to be excluded from hunting where they traditionally have hunted for a long time, or am I wrong there?
Well, Representative Fabian, and I'll let the DNR elaborate, but I think that they would need to be very conscious that they couldn't eliminate the hunting in on that rather large lake, that they would limit it on a part of it, but their opportunities would still exist. I would not be supportive of, just because somebody's hunted there for generations or decades and all of a sudden they say your lake's off limits and it was public waters, I would hope they're not planning on doing that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to hear the DNR's response to that, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, you've raised a really great issue. When we've done our surveys of waterfowl hunters, and we've done, I think, four now, one of the management techniques that receives the greatest support in those surveys is the establishment of refuges. By the same token, one of the most difficult things for us to establish, quite frankly, is refuges. And it's for exactly the same reason that you've pointed out. If an area, is currently providing good habitat for waterfowl, it's very likely to be hunted, and you're going to impinge on hunters that have traditionally used that areas. It's for that reason that we're very cautious when we approach these things. We try to make sure we have absolute public input. But the other thing is that we try to key in on areas, for example, that currently do not provide good habitat for waterfowl, or currently are not providing great opportunity for them to congregate. And as we improve those conditions, then look at the possibilities of establishing a sanctuary or a refuge, depending on, or a feeding and rest area, depending on what the situation calls for. So in doing that, that lessens certainly to a great degree that we're going to impinge on somebody that's hunting the area. If birds aren't using the area now, it's not likely to be hunted. If we improve the area for birds, that provides an opportunity for providing those kind of rest areas without impinging on traditional use.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you find out through the public comment at some point in the future that people don't like this, what's their recourse?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, the commissioner has the authority to get rid of the waterfowl sanctuary or the feeding and rest area simply by decree. It's different than in a game refuge situation where you follow the same process to eliminate the refuge that you did to establish it. So it depends on how that refuge was established, by what kind of petition or public hearings. Kathy had pointed out that although it's not stated explicitly here, in these situations where we're recommending a significant change in use on a lake, we do it through a local public hearing system. If we're changing the management, public hearings are involved in terms of wildlife lake designation. They're involved in terms of changing, significantly changing plans of lakes that are designated. and certainly look at that from the standpoint of refuges and sanctuaries. In addition to that, during our public input process, generally it takes place in February or March, if we have a significant sanctuary or refuge area that we're recommending, it would also go through that public input process. So we're trying to ensure that there's, you know, fully adequate notification, do the best job we can to ensure that everybody is aware of what the recommendation is.
Representative Havien.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope one last final question. Representative McNamara, would you consider some sort of an amendment to this bill that would require the commissioner to have a public meeting in the area that's affected by this? And we can discuss that offline if you want. I don't know what the plan is for this bill today, Mr. Chair.
Representative Havien, the motion was to pass the bill as amended and refer or send it to the General Register. But I'm sure that the department and Representative McNamara would be willing to work with you to discuss whatever changes might have to happen to that. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Havien, I certainly would want to work with you if you've got some ideas on, and it would be good probably for you and I to meet with the department and understand better how has it worked in the past, how have the hunters accepted it, is there some things that we could tweak, and if we need to statutorily, I certainly would be open to an amendment on the floor. I would ask you to work with Representative Hansen. We've both been working on this issue, and it's been something that the hunting community, when after you understand it, it seems like it really is a step in the right direction. But your concerns are ones that we do hear from constituents. How's it going to work? And I respect where you're coming from, because when you've got a spot where you hunt, it's pretty important to you. And so I'd be willing, certainly I'm always willing, but I would want to work with you and let's see if there's a need for something, and I'm not sure that there is, but if there is, I'm open certainly to that idea.
Representative Havien?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's
okay. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to start out by thanking the authors for bringing this. This is real important stuff, and I'm very appreciative of your efforts. I do have a couple of comments, and more than anything else, that I just believe it's important, and it just takes off on the water quality issues that were brought up earlier. Some of you know I've spent some time on water quality issues in lakes, aquatic ecosystems, and it is such great import that I think it bears some repetition, and I have some qualifying remarks too. I want to set the stage, if I can, just a little bit for these aquatic ecosystems.
Representative Purcell, we've been on the bill quite some time. We've got a lengthy agenda that we'd like to get to, too. So
I understand. I'll be as brief as I can, but I think it's important to understand what we are trying to do here and how we need to do it. When we talk about lakes, be they shallow or deep, we're talking about ecosystems that are going to fill up eventually. I hope everybody understands that. The more nutrients that go into them, the quicker they fill up. It was stated that deep ecosystems don't have internal nutrient loading. That's not accurate. They do. And with these shallow ecosystems, the nutrient loading is much more prevalent. Bear with me, if you will, because I do think it's going to have importance on whether you're going to be able to manage these ecosystems. And you may look at the water quality handout that we had here from the DNR and what they're trying to do. You can manage that ecosystem and it's going to be full of scum algae, and your duck hunting ain't going to be worth a hoot. Or even coots. But that... I'll wrap up by just saying that I think this is a good direction that we're headed here, Representative McNamara and Representative Hansen. I think we're trying to do some good work, but if we don't also put great import on managing the water quality of these ecosystems, we're going to be putting more money and effort out there that is going to lead us down a road, we'll be right back here saying, what can we do to manage these refuges we're trying to set up for waterfall? But it won't happen the way we want it to happen if we don't manage water quality. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Okay. Representative Dale.
Well, thank you. I was wondering how many, Representative McNamara, someone from DU, or Ms. Don Carlos, how many of these 4,000 lakes have control structures on them now? And if we have to build control structures, who's going to pay for that? Are those going to be cooperative efforts, or is there going to be Sarge Sam's money that is going to be requested? Is DU going to match money? Are the outdoor alphabet groups going to work on that? How's that going to work?
Mr. Nargard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, the process for installation or putting in control structures where they don't currently exist follows both a legal and a fiscal process, of course, and certainly the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council is seeing a lot of proposals, both from the department, you know, and from Ducks Unlimited, to establish control structures, or more likely, in a lot of situations, to simply upgrade the structures that are there. We need to remember that in a lot of the lakes in Minnesota, there were dams put in during the 1930s or those years immediately following the Great Drought that are no longer operational, or perhaps in some cases ill-conceived to begin with. And so in a lot of cases, we're not establishing new outlet control structures. We're simply modifying ones that are existing. In terms of the number that are currently there, you've caught me a bit flat-footed here, quite frankly, in terms of shallow lakes, and perhaps John Schneider can add anything. But we have 45 lakes that are specifically designated for wildlife management. Nearly all, but not all, of those have control structures on them. In terms of water control structures within Minnesota that the Department of Natural Resources Section Wildlife has responsibility for, and this would include drawdown structures, dams, culverts. They number about 650, but that's across the board. That includes wetlands on WMAs as well as shallow lakes. So there's a substantial number out there, but in the ones that are really that we're talking about in this situation are relatively few in number by comparison.
Okay, Mr. Ness, please state your name and who you represent for the record, and I sure hope you don't generate any more questions.
I'll try to be brief, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Lance Ness, President of the Fish and Wildlife Alliance. This is a very important issue of two of our member groups, the Swan Lake Wildlife Society and the Nickwood Conservation Club. And this, I'll mention this in particular because they are one of the 10 hunters that came forward to the DNR and asked for a sanctuary in the middle of Swan Lake. And the reason they did that was for spring disturbance, because there was so much disturbance on the lake with new jet skis and other types of watercraft that they were disturbing the nesting waterfall. And this isn't during the hunting season, this is during the spring. And so they wanted to protect the nesting waterfall for the future. This is not only just the waterfall we hunt, but egrets and swans and grebes, all kinds of other things. So it's vitally important. And again, it was brought forward by hunters. We strongly support this. This is a long time in coming, and I'll keep my comments brief, Mr. Chairman. We strongly support this legislation.
Very good. Members, we've had a lengthy discussion on this, and very important issues that were brought up, particularly about property rights and those kinds of things. But we need to get moving on. And Representative Draskowski, I'll give you the last comments.
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative McNamara, I've got the same property rights concerns that Representative Fabian's got. I hope and I'm willing to, not impede the progress of this bill here today, but I'm hopeful that you'll work with Representative Fabian to get some property rights protection in this bill as it goes forward. I have those same concerns. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good.
Thank
and
you,
I think Representative McNamara stated that earlier, that he was willing to work in that area. Representative McNamara.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2870 pass and be sent to the General Register. I wanted to make one comment that
as
I think all of us should like, that this is going to create higher quality habitat on existing land that we already have. This isn't about getting more land to get more ducks. This is about working on land that we already have. It's going to help with the degradation that common carp have caused. So I look for broad bipartisan support, and we'll work on the issues of the bill.
Representative McNamara renews his motion that House File 2870 be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. Bill is adopted and passed to the general register.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you, Representative McNamara. Thank you, everyone, for the great discussion. Next, on to game and fish license increases and the possibility of that happening. And I believe we have a presentation that the Minnesota DNR is going to present.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I have with me Jennifer Wycall, who is our lead staff person on this licensing initiative, just in case there's any technical questions that do come up. In your packets, you should have a presentation entitled Dedicated to Fish and Wildlife Conservation Delivery. Rather than do a PowerPoint, I just thought I'd hand out the paper version instead. That way you have something to take with you. And with that, I'm just going to run through the presentation and talk a little bit about how we got here today. As you can see, approximately 1.5 million licensed anglers and 600,000 licensed hunters support Minnesota's economy. This provides a huge impact, 56,000 jobs and over $3.6 billion in expenditures every year, supporting mostly our rural and outstate economies. If any of you have gone out during the fishing opener or deer opener, there are a lot of people on the road spending gas, restaurants, hotels, bait shops, hunting and fishing stores, providing that money into those local economies. The next page just shows the Game and Fish Fund, what it's comprised of, and this is a dedicated fund that does not receive any general. There's about $100,000 a year general fund remaining within the Game and Fish Fund currently. The Game and Fish Fund over the years has seen a $2.6 million reduction in general funding. And we've absorbed, through cost cuts and efficiencies, $10 million of costs in the past biennium. So it has received substantial pressures on it from taking monies out of it. The licenses also haven't been raised for over 10 years, which is the longest period of time over the last 40 years that these fees haven't been adjusted. You can see it's about $94 million, made up of 60% approximately from our hunting and fishing license fees, 13% from the Dingle Johnson or Sport Fishing Restoration Program, 16% from the Wildlife Restoration Program. Those are two federal programs comprised of excise taxes on sport fishing and ammunition, and also 12% from the Heritage Enhancement Account. Going on to the next slide, members, the forecasts are down, and you can see the red line is where we are at with the February 12 forecast. The blue line was based on the November 2010 forecast, and we did lose approximately $2 million of license sales due to government shutdown last year. So that kind of expedited the precipitation in the funds and moved up that shortfall faster. The next slide just kind of talks about that, $7.6 million less in projected revenues for the following, or this biennium right now. A reduction in federal funding of $4.3 million, and then that $2.2 million in fishing license sales that I spoke of from the government shutdown. Further loss of $1.1 million projected in fishing revenues in FY13 does increase the urgency to do this. What our proposal was contained last year in the governor's budget and also this year in the governor's supplemental budget was to increase basically the license dollars, the fishing license, to $24. And this slide shows that just based on inflation from 2001 to current, that adjustment would be $21.59. The firearms deer license would be $25 in 2001, bring that with inflation to $31.75. As I mentioned, our fishing license proposal is recommended in our proposal to go from $17 to $24, a $7 increase. The deer hunting license is recommended to go from 26 to 30. The reason why fishing licenses are increasing a little bit more than the hunting licenses is to offset the Game and Fish Fund, what some people perceive as an imbalance. Some we're spending more money on fishing out of the Game and Fish Fund than we've been taking into fishing licenses. Though the fund never says, the intent of the fund is not to say you can only spend fishing dollars on fishing and hunting dollars on hunting. It is managed as a commingled fund. User groups and our budget oversight committee saw this imbalance, and it was a grave concern of theirs several years ago. So we're trying to correct that with this proposal as well. The next slide just talks about what we've been doing to manage these costs. And just like most all government agencies, I should say, and everyone else within the country, we've been trying to manage within our means and do whatever we can to adjust our spending. Vacancies have grown from 2008. We're down 57 fish and wildlife staff and 29 enforcement officers to help us deal with this. Using technology to reduce staff time, contracting with private entities to deal with those things, and also looking at energy efficiencies at our hatcheries, for example, are a large use of energy within the Fish and Wildlife Division. Going on to the next page, some people say that, next slide, some people are concerned when they always hear, well, why don't you use the lottery dollars, or didn't we just vote for an increase in funding for the dedicated funding? We're very clear that there is no substitution. These funds have, as we all know, very specific purposes. The trust fund may not be used as a substitute for traditional sources of funding, and the legacy sales tax amendment says the dedicated money under this section must supplement traditional sources of funding for these purposes and may not be used as a substitution. We must compete for funds that now flow, that must compete for funds not direct flow to the department. So we apply for, you all know this, we apply for applications, we apply for projects. Legislature recommends and does appropriate those dollars. There was a substantial amount of work put into our process and the proposal that we developed, and actually it started probably 2010, working with a consulting firm that does a lot of natural resource-based research throughout the states. We looked at, kind of as a business would do, what would our price point structure be? What should we price our licenses at so we don't lose people? Where are people, where is the fall off on these licenses? To begin with that work, we kind of looked at, benchmarked where we're at with licenses within the states. Minnesota's the top five destination state behind coastal states such as Florida, Texas, California, and Alaska. But only 12 states within the United States charge less than we do for fishing licenses. You can see on this slide, Iowa's above us, Wisconsin, South Dakota, Nebraska, Michigan, and California is the highest in the country right now. But we need to readjust our fishing license, hunting and fishing license packages. You can see this next slide, the comparisons of going to one event, a baseball game, a football game, a hockey game. It's a lot more than what you would pay to hunt or fish. A fishing license is good for 12 months out of the year. So $2 a month to go fishing is a great deal in our aspect. Also, if you look at some of the other venues in the state, I believe the state fair has raised their prices several times over the past decade compared to the hunting and fishing license fee increases. Our work, our research kind of showed us that we should be careful about what we do and where we generate revenues. But also, I want to make sure you guys understand that there have been some increases to other licenses in the past decade. Since 2001, the non-resident fishing licenses have gone up about $5.50. $2 of that was an aquatic invasive species surcharge, as we don't have a good mechanism in place to capture some kind of aquatic invasive species funding from people coming into our state. We're very concerned about what they may be bringing with them besides their dollars. And also $3.50, probably three bienniums ago, to offset the loss from the requirement to have daily shelter licenses. You used to have to require to license all of your portable ice fishing shelters, whether or not you're leaving them on the ice or not overnight. Now currently it's just that if you leave them on the ice overnight, you need to license them. However, the big wheel shacks, I call it, do need to be registered through Department of Public Safety because they are considered a trailer, so to speak. This next slide just talks about our analysis and what we did. We determined that more revenue could be generated from some but not all license types, and their customer input helped determine the license pricing structures and the new modified licenses as well. While we looked at our whole license package, we developed some new licenses as well, new opportunities. The 90-day fishing license, for example. A person can buy a 90-day license if they only fish during the summer months or only fish during the winter months. We also evaluated the pressures that were being put on and the prices that some people were paying to participate in certain sports like dark house angling licensing. They currently have to buy a fishing license, but then they were required to buy a dark house angling license as well. And now our proposal just says you need to have a fishing license, but a $5 endorsement for residents, $10 endorsement for non-residents to participate in that program. So providing some benefits, new opportunity, and looking where the current pricing structure may have been slightly out of balance, and bringing all of that together created the package that we have. Our findings of our research, you'll see here, it indicated that not all license types will create more revenue with an increase. Non-resident individual angling, perhaps, family angling, seven-day angling. But our customers also supported new increases to new options. The individual annual increase, they thought they could go up to $25, actually. The married couple fishing increase is still a discount, though it's a little bit higher. That license was priced below the price point, we thought, for the current structures. And then that new 90-day fishing license and new packaging of our small game license with stamps, a super sports license that provides more flexibility or more simplicity to some of our users who buy all of the licenses every year. They can go in and just get one package. So it does provide new opportunity as well. In addition, the proposal does stabilize the Game and Fish Fund in 2019 and provides a strong, stable support of service that the department would be able to have. The department's proposal, which is Representative Hansen's bill, does reflect that proposal from last session, would generate approximately $9.4 million of new fishing license revenue and $4.6 million of new hunting license revenue. We believe it's a customer-friendly in structure and value, and it continues our ability to maximize federal dollars. We are reimbursed from the federal government for every license that we net a dollar or more on. So that's contained in federal code. They do look at our licenses. We participate with them, and we receive money back from the federal government for the licenses that we purchase here. Members, that's a brief review of how we got to our proposal today, and I can stand for any questions.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Meyer. And members, there's a number of proposals out there. Representative Hansen is carrying the department bill from last year, the governor's recommendation. I think even the department has tweaked that a little bit and changed it a little bit. Senator Ingebrigtsen in the Senate has a proposal. I have a proposal that is going to be coming forward, I hope. I wanted to have that introduced last week, but I pulled it back to make some changes. So this is not the last we heard of this issue. This is just informational hearing only to get the ball rolling on what we might want to do on hunting and fishing license increases. With that, I believe that Representative McNamara had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate yours and Representative Hansen's work on this issue and the department coming forward. Mr. Meyer, I remember from years ago, I'm one who likes to deer hunt in a number of different spots in the state. If I'm not mistaken, we've lowered that price for me substantially. I'm trying to remember. I used to have to buy a statewide if I wanted to hunt up north and back home, and I don't have to buy that anymore. What kind of a hole did that put in? If I remember right, it was a double-priced it's got to be significant that we lowered that, wasn't it?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we did several years ago look at our licensing, the deer license structure. We used to have the multi-zone buck. You had a all-season license where you could buy a license that was for archery, muzzleloader, and firearm season. What we did is we decoupled those license packages, kind of made them a la carte. It used to be you couldn't buy a rifles license and a muzzleloader license separately. You either had to pick firearms or muzzleloader, and then the only way to hunt those two seasons were to buy the all-season license. It was about a $2 million reduction in decoupling all of those, but again, we saw an increase in muzzleloader licenses because people were able to hunt both the firearms and the muzzleloader season without buying that third tag or that archery season license.
Representative McNamara? Okay. Members, we are generating some questions, and we do want to have some time for Mr. Reinholz to run through some of the comparisons of the different bills, the governor's recommendation and what the Senate is proposing and some of the changes that I want to make. But with that, Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I see the hole in the budget, and I'm going to vote to fill up the hole. But I think there's another dynamic that has come up since the governor's proposal was made. And we heard the school trust bill in this committee. It passed in Ways and Means with a lot of enthusiasm a couple of days ago. I was a no vote in this committee, and I was a no vote in Ways and Means, but it's going to pass the floor. And one of the consequences of that passing the floor is that we are going to have to start paying the school trust fund for people using trust fund lands for hunting and fishing. And I think when any proposal that comes up has got to have that reality in it. So I drafted an amendment just so we'd talk about the issue. Not that I'm going to offer it or anything, but sometimes you just have to have some piece of paper to talk about the issue. And so that's what I did. I think you members know that that trust fund bill is going to pass the floor when it comes up either this week or next. I'm still going to be a no vote, but reality is it's going to pass. And it's going to pass the Senate. So we need to talk about this.
Representative Dill.
I don't think it's in this bill, but is the department contemplating canceling the conservation fishing license?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, that was in our proposal, yes.
And so, Mr. Chairman, why would that be? I can tell you that at my resort in Canada, I have quit selling licenses except for conservation licenses. And I require my guests to buy a conservation license. Is that a money issue? Is conservation licenses not doing conservation? Is it not working out that it isn't conservation? Are there a lot of violations because people are over limit? What is the impetus behind that? I know my senator is quite concerned about it. He called me last night and threw up the red flag, and I know he spoke to you about it.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer.
Representative Dill. The average sales of the conservation license to date have been about $15,000 a year compared to $490,000 of our regular fishing licenses. It was based on that determination and the fact that we were providing more different opportunity. We just thought to simplify things, just like when we got rid of the all-season deer license. I understand that was some people's pride and joy as well, and that wasn't an easy decision for us to get rid of. But based upon just the low number of sales and what was a perceived interest out there, we recommended removing that and instead replace it with the 90-day license. But it is something we could revisit if we need to. It's not a problem.
Just one more question.
Representative Dill.
So the 90-day license is going to be the full limit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to say a couple quick comments about the bill. This is the governor's recommendation, and I appreciate the chair working on a bill as well, and I know there's things happening in the Senate. I think the one of the items that Mr. Meyer commented on, which is I think a very good part of the bill, is the menu of options for marketing the fishing license. I think when we talk about hunting and angling, we're often talking about the folks that are already doing it. And we need to look at the people who used to do it and don't do it anymore, or the people who could do it and may not know how. And particularly in angling, where we have more anglers than we have hunters. I know we've got folks, maybe single parents with kids, grandpa wants to take them fishing for a weekend, they can't do it, or they don't want to buy a whole year license. So by offering the options, particularly the short-term options, I believe we can get more people into angling. I believe you're going to get different folks than we normally have hunting and angling by offering more options. And for the long-term health of our environment in the state, we have to diversify the angling and the hunting community, and we have to bring more people into the outdoors, both for their own health, but also for the health of our environment. And I believe the governor's recommendation does that. I believe some of the others do as well. Specifically, though, I know they're in the Senate, they are talking about having free licenses for certain ages. And this comes up, there are bills introduced year after year exempting this group or that group from based on age. And I think when we have something free, it doesn't have any value. We think back when we bought our first fishing license, our first hunting license, maybe we were 13 years old, maybe we were 14, 15, or 16. I think we have to have folks getting into the habit of buying a license. I think if we exempt people until they're 18 from buying a license, you're not going to have teenagers who suddenly turn 18 and say, now I'm going to start buying a license, even if they've been hunting or fishing with a free license. The habit forming, the participation, the responsibility that there isn't anything free, that there's an opportunity that comes because we invest through our licenses into our resources, important. So, Mr. Chair, I know if you're ever in the negotiations with the Senate, that free doesn't have any value. We need to show the value of these licenses, and that's why you have to have a fee on them, not only for the bottom line, but for getting people involved in hunting and angling and the outdoors.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And just a note to that before we move on to some other folks that want to have some questions. Representative Hansen, I don't believe the Senate has a free license. There is going to be a charge for the youth license. And Representative Reinholz, or Mr. Reinholz, will get to that when we get to the spreadsheet and explain the differences between the different bills. But Representative Anderson, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From driving around my area this past winter, Lake Minnewaska, because of the warm winter, a big decline in the number of fish houses out there. And they were replaced in large degree by the portable fish houses. They're lighter and a bit safer. Any thought to bringing back a license of some sort on the portable fish houses to make up some revenue?
Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we always have thoughts about doing that. The reality of it, I don't think, is very positive sometimes. A lot of people are moving more towards those portable shelters, and it's something we did. The revenue was replaced, so that wasn't a concern of ours. We are still selling. I'm not sure how many shelter tags, but that would be a decision or a discussion that we would need to have with you all and try to figure out where we could go with that.
Representative Knuth. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you mentioned, or at least one slide referred to reductions in staff in the department. I'm curious, within the Game and Fish Fund spending, what have your reductions been in the Game and Fish Fund spending, and what is your contingency plan should there not be license fee increases? What is your contingency plan in the department given that?
Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, as I mentioned, we've seen a $2.7 million reduction in general fund over the past years, and that has brought us to 57 vacancies within the Fish and Wildlife Division and 29 vacancies within the Enforcement Division. As they're a big component of our Game and Fish Fund budget as well. We're driving fewer miles using different vehicles. Overall, it's been a $10.5 million that we've had to reallocate and try to absorb those reductions through our workforce. So fewer lake surveys, reduction, 20% reduction in wildlife field work across the board, utilizing technology to be more efficient. Of course, we're having to do that all over the place, saving office time to have to enter field data, we used to manage and make our own fish nets. We're private contracting those out now. And the energy reduction at our French River and Peterson's hatchery has been about $150,000 cost savings as well, trying to more energy efficient material. And we're looking for new opportunities every day. We are still holding a lot of vacancies open and looking at doing our work differently or doing less of certain things. So,
thank you, Mr. Meyer. Mr. Chair?
Representative Roscoe.
So, Mr. Meyer, you mentioned $2.7 million from the general fund. What about the Game and Fish Fund? We're talking about the Game and Fish Fund today. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, the slide that talks about the forecasts, you can see where in the Game and Fish Fund, the way the license structures work, usually you'd have an increase in licensing. It increases the fund, and then we spend that down over the years. I can get more specific information to you on what the spending of the Game and Fish Fund has been over the past few bienniums, or I don't know if Mr. Reinholz has it, but it has been decreasing. The problem we have is we forecasted that it was going to remain stable for some time, and now it's going insolvent faster than what we thought.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I look forward to seeing what those reductions have been, Mr. Meyer, in the Game and Fish Fund. Do you have a contingency plan? Should these license fees not increase, what is your contingency plan with the Game and Fish Fund?
Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll, we have several different versions we're looking at, and again, we can review that with you in some detail. It basically is holding more vacancies, doing less field work, all of the above, the impacts of other programs, fish stocking, things like that, less enforcement people, which I know some people probably would support, but we feel it's important to have a strong enforcement division, not only for keeping people doing the right things, but for safety purposes as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Dresdell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, so do you have a written contingency plan? And if so, can we get a copy of what that would be? I'd be interested in that.
Mr. Chairman, I can provide that information to you, yes.
Representative Dresdell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, what percentage of the Game and Fish Fund is related to what percentage of the Game and Fish Fund expenditures are related to habitat?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, I will provide that within our response on the contingency plan.
Representative Rostowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I thought I read somewhere it's about 40%, but I'll look forward to seeing that. The slide that talks about the other states and do any of those states collect $280 million a year in legacy dollars?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, I can find out. Missouri does collect. The Missouri model is kind of where Minnesota came from, our model came from. And I'm not sure where that falls on this line, but I believe they are above us. I can get that information. I will provide in our comments the full list of every state so you can see the rankings. And note where there are other states that have special funds. States such as Colorado have a similar fund, the Go Colorado Fund, like our Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, places like that. So we can provide that information.
Mr. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would just like to read quickly an email that I received from a constituent yesterday. It said, Dear Sir, in regards to hunting and fishing license, I'm a 70-year-old sportsman, retired and on a fixed income. My pension is frozen and will never go up. Please stop the DNR from raising the hunting and fishing license. If they can't afford what they're doing, then stop spending like I have to. That's from a constituent, and I've received several like that. Mr. Chair, just curious about what the future plan for this discussion is as we move into future days here.
Well, Representative Raskowski, that is yet to be determined. The Senate is moving forward with a bill that's going to increase hunting and fishing licenses. We're not sure where we're at yet. We're still working on it. It's a work in progress, like we said at the beginning of this hearing. We are looking at it, discussing it, trying to tweak it here and there, trying to do some different things. You know, the DNR has their plan. The governor has their recommendation. Representative McNamara and I have our viewpoint on this. Ingebrigtsen has his. We're trying to work out some of the details to come together on some kind of an agreement. Representative Jaskowski, I understand where your constituent's coming from. I think we all get those kind of emails and comments. But the fact remains, and this is a question that I was going to have for Mr. Meyer, about the sales. And we have dollar figures in his presentation, but I'm interested to know where are the sales? Are the sales falling off? I think that we've heard that, at least in the past, that fishing license sales have been dropping. I don't know about the hunting licenses, but that's one thing that we need to know about. The fact remains, Representative Drazkowski, I hear all the time from particularly Republicans that the government should run more like a business. These fees have not been increased in over 10 years, and we still need to maintain the quality of hunting and fishing that our hunters and fishermen expect in the state of Minnesota. And this is where this happens. These are dedicated funds that go to hunting and fishing, and the department, we are asking the Department of Natural Resources to maintain that high quality of hunting and fishing that are expected in the state of Minnesota. So to operate like a business, we fees increase, everything increases, there's inflation, everything is going up. You have to admit that. And now the these dedicated funds are on the decline. We're demanding more and we're getting less. We're receiving less revenue to do the same or better quality of work that we want. So we're going to have to bring in more revenue to do that. That's just a simple fact. So something has to be done if we're going to maintain fisheries and wildlife the way we expect it to be and the way our citizens expect it to be when they go hunting and fishing. So I would like at this time, and if, I hope I answered your question, we're still working on it. That's where we're at. Still working on it. Hope to bring something forward next week to discuss this matter more next week.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just quickly, Mr. Chair, thank you. I would hope that in our next discussion we would have a breakdown of the expenditures of the department from the Game and Fish Fund so that we can take a close look at what the expenditures and the revenue sides are to this particular fund and zoom in particularly on the Game and Fish Fund so we can take a close look at that. And lastly, Mr. Chair, I would just remind folks that you know, if you tax something, you can expect less of it. And I don't think we want less of hunting and fishing in Minnesota. Thank you.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, we will provide that information for you as well. And I would be remiss if I didn't just let you know in your packages, there is a letter from the Game and Fish Fund Budget Oversight Committee, which is made up of citizens throughout the state that do take a very close look at our spending and expenditures. We have a detailed Game and Fish Fund report, which I'll get you a copy, Representative Drazkowski. We can provide copies for the committee as well. And lastly, I just want to say thank you very much for taking the time to talk about this important issue. It has been a long time. I believe the citizens of our state, your constituents, expect high-quality hunting and fishing. And if we don't do something soon, there will be impacts. Just as we were talking about a lake turning over from a clear state to a polluted state, our fisheries and activities are on the turning edge. If we don't do something soon, people will see drastic impacts to their hunting and fishing, the work that we do on the ground. So,
Mr. Meyer, those are the kinds of things that we do want to see. Please provide some of those things. Please provide more detail about the efficiencies that you've already had to do because of the depleted funds in the game.
Mr. Chair, I will get that out to you soon.
I do want to get to Mr. Reinholdt, how long do you think it'll take to just run through the differences? I don't want you to do it just yet because we've got another question, but how long do you think it'll take? 5 minutes or less?
5 minutes or
okay.
less.
Thank you. Who had a question, Representative Purcell?
Not a question, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you for what you just said about the need for fishing license increases. This is a long time coming. Thanks.
Mr. Reinholdt, could you run through just some of the changes that we have between Representative Hansen's bill, which is the governor's bill, where the Senate is at is right now, and some of the ideas that I'm working with, where we're at on the numbers.
Mr. Chairman and members, you should have in your handouts a four-page spreadsheet that I have put together in order for you to see the differences in the proposals that are out there for consideration. I'll just first describe how it's organized. Really, it's just a listing of the various hunting, fishing licenses that are currently available. So you can see in one column the current price. Then there is the next column is the governor's proposal. That is Representative Hansen's House File 1583. Then you'll see a Senate proposed. This is representing the proposal that passed this week out of the Senate Environment Finance Committee. Is in the Senate Finance Committee at this time. The one labeled House proposal is Representative Hackbarth's proposed bill that is being drafted. Then I will just quickly, I'll show the differences using the governor's proposal as basically the base, and I'll go through and show you where differences are in the Senate proposal and the House proposal. Starting in the resident angling, the Senate, the governor proposes an increase to $24 for the individual angling, and the Senate is down at 22. The rest of those are down, the next three are the same in all three proposals. Then you have the three-year individual angling license. The Senate has that at 63 versus the governor and the House proposal at 69. The next two items are the same. And then if you go down to the resident youth angling, you'll see that the governor's proposal was 12. The Senate and the House are both at a reduced amount of 5. The resident married couple, the governor's proposal and Representative Hansen's bill is at $40. The Senate has that at 35. In the non-resident angling, there are some differences. The Senate proposal is the same as the governor's on those items. The House proposal is slightly larger, and you can see the numbers there and compare those to the governor as being the first four are a few dollars larger in each case. Down on the non-resident youth, the Senate has reduced their youth non-resident from the governor's recommendation down to 5. The House proposal is at the same as the governor. If you go down in the non-resident married couple, just as the individuals were up slightly in the House proposal from the governor, those two are up slightly. Those are the fishing licenses differences between the three proposals. If you go to the hunting license ones, the first group is the same in all three. The resident youth, there are some differences. If you look at that, the governor has increased those slightly. The Senate proposal keeps their youth small game and reduces it actually to $5. And the House also does. The House also reduces the youth deer and the youth turkey to $5. The next sort of section, the non-resident individual 18 and older, are the same in all three. The non-resident youth, the youth small game, the Senate proposal is to reduce that down to $5 for those 16 and 17-year-olds. Those are the differences between the three on that page. On the next page, really mostly the same. The one difference is if you look in the second grouping, sort of the sports license for married couples, the Senate has that slightly lower at $52 versus $59 with the governor and the House. Really, the rest of that page and the next page, all three of the proposals, the amounts are the same. Mr. Chairman, that's just a quick review of the differences between the proposals.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. And members, an additional item that I was going to include in my bill is we have these application fees. There's a number of application fees to apply for lottery licenses such as Bear, et cetera. Right now, there's no application fee for Bear to apply for a Bear license for a lottery, and I'm going to say that there is going to be one, and it's going to be $4. We're going to make them $4 across the board. And so with that, there's some reductions in some of the application fees, but when we take on the Bear application fee, that's actually going to end up bringing in more revenue. So there will be the increase in the overall. It's averaged out about $4. I think it was all the applications. Also, in the I just wanted to comment the difference between the House and the Senate right now. And Representative Hansen alluded to this earlier. There's not going to be free licenses, but there's a number of licenses that the Senate made $5, and I made those licenses $5 in the Senate or in the House too. But the difference between the House and the Senate, I made all youth resident licenses $5. In the Senate, they did only the angling $5. And then they also changed some non-resident licenses to $5. I didn't do that. I kept all youth non-resident licenses at the current governor's recommendation. I only reduced resident youth licenses to $5. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We've got a few minutes left. Representative Hansen and then Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to note, I appreciate the clarification, and I stand corrected from before.
That's quite all right, Representative Hansen, and I should state that I did want to give free licenses, except for maybe the transaction fees, the deputy register fees, and that. I thought that they should have to pay for that, not just allowing people to fish and hunt free as youth, but issue them a license, but at that kind of a reduced cost. But then we would also lose the federal money. So you have to make a profit to get the federal dollars. So that's why we're reducing it and making it a $5 across the board simple license to buy for the youth. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to take up on something Representative Anderson brought up about the shelters. And I believe there is a trend. I'd like to see it on paper from the DNR, but I know on the lake that I have my fish house on, my permanent house. Less and less permanent houses, more and more folks. They made these shelters, you know, so easy to use and so nice. I think we're going to trend toward needing that shelter license again. I just want to support that effort. For Representative Gravkowski's, you know, years ago we had that, I don't know what the age was, 70 or something, you could get a deer license for nothing or reduce costs, and we did away with that. And I wonder what the impact. Is that a huge impact if we did that again? I mean, I think folks that have a fixed income that want to go hunt, we should have some accommodation, I do believe.
Well, Representative Purcell, we did address this a number of times, a number of years ago, and ever since we changed it, we've been addressing it. The population is getting older. And if we start giving free licenses to people 65 years and older, we're not going to have much left in the Game and Fish Fund. But I do want to also say, members, that we need to get our youth more involved and out in the woods, hunting and fishing, get them involved. And when we talk about the reduction of the amount of licenses that we're selling, it's because our youth aren't getting involved. I think it's very, very important to offer this much reduced license for our youth under 18, an advantage for the parents to get their kids out into the woods and out on the lake hunting and fishing. I think this is an important step to do, and hopefully it's going to work and get people more involved. Representative Dill.
Thank you. This isn't relating to hunting and fishing, but in a way it is. I just got an email yesterday from the head of the Minnesota State High School Trap Shooting Association, and this year they're anticipating to have 780 entrants from the high schools in a state trap shooting tournament, which began at about 50 just a couple of years ago. So there are people, and that's not a cheap sport to participate in when you figure ammunition, travel, targets, and all that. There are young folks in our high schools that are interested in these types of activities that translate into, and I think that that's one avenue, and I sponsored a bill that got money to look at a state facility, and just there are people that are interested in doing this kind of thing, and I think we just need to be able to cross it over to hunting and then fishing as well.
Very good. And one last word. I was talking to the DNR yesterday. We're talking about free licenses that are issued. Right now, we're issuing approximately 17,000 licenses a year that are free for various reasons. Members, meeting adjourned.